And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. You welcome along to another week of the 9 till noon show on your number one local radio station. This is Highland Radio and it's 5 minutes past nine on this, the 1st of July. Wow, just glanced at the phone, didn't realise we're into July already. For obvious reasons, you wouldn't know it was July, would you? But we are here all month and here for the next 3 hours as well. You can get involved in the conversation, trigger your own by WhatsApp or texting 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000. You can send your WhatsApp voice notes to that message too, if that suits you a little bit better. If you want to give us a call, 07491 25000 is how you get through to us. And also you can email comments at highlandradio.com and feel free to watch the program if it suits you, if you're at home. You can fire up the smart TV, open the YouTube app, type in Highland Radio Ireland, and also on your Fire Stick. And we are also across Facebook, Highland Hub, News and Sport, and around the world on the X platform. Right, let's see what's making the front pages. But, you know, let's go to the back page of the Donegal News, because it was a big weekend for lots and lots of people. I saw loads of people manage to, I think it was a bit of a stroke of luck for many people who were lucky enough to get Taylor Swift tickets on Saturday night. And then also able to head along to Croke Park to watch Donegal win and then head up the road. I would say it was a fantastic weekend for many people out there today. But Donegal manager Jim McGuinness says his team will relish an All-Ireland semi-final clash with Galway. For the fourth time in five attempts, McGuinness has led Donegal to the last four of the All-Ireland Senior Football Championship. If you were at the game or watched the game, let us know what you thought or listen to it for that matter. Brendan Devaney, as always, on a Monday will be in later on to discuss all things at GEA. But when you look at what this team has achieved this year and then you look back to when the last time it happened, or the last time we had this level of success, and you see who was the manager then, it really just does point to Jim McGuinness having the Midas touch. The county hasn't reached this stage in 10 years, but they booked their spot with an emphatic 123-118 triumph against Louth. 123-18 point triumph against Louth on Sunday. It was a fine win for Donegal, and their prize now is a clash with Galway, who caused a huge surprise by dumping All-Ireland champions Dublin out of the race for Sam Maguire on Saturday. I don't think it was that big a surprise. I think Galway a good outfit, Dublin not firing on all cylinders, and that's not to take away from what Galway achieved. I think that was the best game of the weekend. The other three didn't really, weren't terribly entertaining. Dublin, and particularly Kerry, really boring to watch at times. But I don't watch the Sunday game or any of those. I don't watch much of the analysis either. But I think that Derry, Donegal, beg your pardon, the other D, Dublin or Kerry didn't get the criticism that an Ulster team might get for the time of a game they play. Kerry, in a traditional Ulster football sense, could be playing in the Ulster Championship with the way they played yesterday. But it was heartbreak for you Derry fans out there as well. McGuinness is pals with Galway manager Pádraig Joyce from their Trulli IT days, and the Glenties man was videoed taking a training session with the tribesmen back in 2020. However, he's now back as Donegal manager and will lead his county back to Croke Park in a fortnight's time. No fixture details were released at the time of going to print, but the semi-final will take place on either Saturday, June 13th or Sunday, July 14th. Sorry, that should be July 13th there. It is on the Saturday, July 13th. What time it is, I don't know. I didn't see that, but it's definitely on the Saturday. On to the Derry news now, and tens of thousands of people flocked to Derry's quay to enjoy the fun at the Foyle Maritime Festival. Despite the rain, the weather didn't dampen spirits as the four-day festival proved to be a massive success once again. After a damp start on Thursday, the sun decided to finally make an appearance on Friday, bringing the fair weather visitors with it in their droves to enjoy the packed programme of water taster sessions. An awful lot went on over the weekend, of course, locally as well. I wasn't there, but I heard that the Donegal Town Summer Festival was a huge success. They moved the stage down onto the quay down there, and apparently it was a fantastic weekend. Well done to all involved in organising that. On to the Irish Independent, and this was as inevitable as night follows day. Waste collection companies have warned they may increase prices for recycling bin collections to make up for the loss of plastic bottles and drinks cans to the deposit return scheme. They say the bottles and cans are the most valuable items in household green bins, and they're losing millions of euro in sales of these to manufacturers since the DRS HAP began. Aluminium cans, which can be recycled indefinitely, are worth 800 to 1400 a ton on the recycle materials market. PET plastics, which is used in beverage bottles, lose quality the more it's recycled, so it's worth less, but at around 500 a ton, it's still a valuable material. It's understood that waste companies are concerned about losing up to 15 million a year in this way. Again, I'm thinking of particularly those of you out there who were very keen recyclers. You were happily put it into your bin, no problem. Made sure that it was done all correctly and what have you. Now you have to take your plastic bottles and cans to a machine in your local shop, and you're going to be hit with more recycling at home costs. How does that make sense? Make it make sense. The Irish Times, French far right on course to take power. Big shock, big gamble by President Macron in France, and it has royally backfired in his face. The far right is on course to become the biggest force in French politics in a major political defeat for French President Emmanuel Macron following the first of two rounds of voting in parliamentary elections. Exit polls in France show National Rally, the anti-immigration Eurosceptic party of Marine Le Pen, won 34% of the vote in the first round of snap elections called by Mr. Macron. He didn't have to. He just chose to. He thought, his logic was is that, you know, the far-right parties, which they call themselves in France, it's not a slur as such, that they'd done very well in the European election. So he thought, right, I'm going to call a national election now, and the French public will be so aghast that this style of politics might be taking over that they'll come out in droves and vote for the centre-left parties. That didn't happen. They came out, they topped the poll, they added many, many more votes than they had 2 years ago. And if you listen to the French people speaking in French, and obviously through a translator, you listen to the Vox Pops where people are asked questions on the street, effectively, everything they say is what people say here. It's funny how, no matter what the language is or where it is, that the issues generally remain the same. A lot of it is along the lines of, France is a very welcoming country. We'll do our bit if people are fleeing war, but there's an awful lot of single men or men on their own coming into France. They're concerned about that. They're concerned too about Islam and the impact it might have. A lot of the same conversations that you hear here are happening in France, but they have a party that they can vote for, and they have in massive numbers. I'm not sure really there's such a party here. There are individuals and maybe a loose collective, but certainly not a party like Marine Le Pen to vote for. So as I say, it's backfired now. It's got to the stage now where those in the left and far left of politics, and the far left apparently are as scary as the far right, according to Macron, they're going to have to try and pull out candidates in certain areas with a view to blocking the far right's progression. So this is the terminology they use themselves, by the way. Mr. Macron, as I mentioned, called the snap election. But if the results are repeated in the second runoff round of voting on Sunday, July 7th, in the likely outcome would be a hung parliament or a far-right government that would upend the French political system. Hadji, the banning those, the far-right party would be banning the use of those, wearing those in public, a crackdown on Islam. It is Islam, isn't it? Sorry, I have to double check that now. This is what they're promising anyway. And tighter border controls with fellow European countries. On to the Irish Daily Mail now. And more than a third of patients are malnourished when being admitted to hospital in Ireland, and the level is increasing with the elderly and cancer patients most at risk. So they are malnourished, so they're not getting the right amount of food and goodness into them. A third of patients turning up at hospital. Isn't this remarkable? Or when I say not turning up at hospital, actually being admitted to hospital. A new survey with data from 3,662 patients across 26 public hospitals across the country found an increase in hospital admissions. Malnutrition to 34%, up from 28% in 2010. The Irish Society for Clinical Nutrition and Metabolism is calling for malnutrition screening to be expanded to other clinical settings, especially for cancer patients and frail older people. Report co-author and IRSPEN director Niamh Rice said the survey identified two major reasons for the rise in patients with risk factors for malnutrition. She said the first is an increase in the age demographic of patients presenting at hospital, with older people more likely to be malnourished. And secondly, a higher incidence of cancer, resulting in more cancer patients within the general hospital population, with this patient cohort also more likely to suffer nutritional problems, resulting in malnutrition. Let us see. Now we'll go to the Irish Daily Star. New figures have revealed that the total number of teachers and special needs assistants who've had to take leave from work due to being assaulted has almost trebled in the last 5 years. They also show each violent incident in schools in 2023 led to a member of teaching staff taking an average of 18 days off work. Last year, a total of 412 teaching staff availed of a scheme supported by the Department of Education for teachers and SNAs unable to perform their duties due to physical injuries from an assault. The figures also show that violent incidences in schools predominantly affect SNAs at primary level. Teaching staff forced to take leave last year consisted of 301 SNAs and 111 teachers, with all but eight assaults occurring to staff in primary school, which is quite an interesting statistic. The level of assaults on staff was up 58% on the 260 cases recorded the previous year and almost treble the pre-pandemic total in 2019 of 144. So I wonder what is leading to this increase. The amount of assaults in the school setting are predominantly against special needs assistants and also in primary school, all but eight of all of those cases in primary school. And on average, a teacher availed of 18, or an SNA availed of 18 days off following the assault. New survey out over the weekend. Fine Gael is the most popular party in the country for the first time in 3 years. Taoiseach Simon Harris's party dropped 1 point to 21% in the latest business post-Red Sea study. But with Sinn Féin down to 20%, it is the first time since June 2021 Fine Gael has topped a national poll. The plummeting popularity for Mary Lou McDonald's side is partly due to a continuing loss of support from would-be voters aged 18 to 24, down from 27% to 24% since May. The backing from those aged 55 and over has also fallen by 6 points, from 20% to 14%. There was also a small drop in Sinn Féin support from the working class, down 1 point to 26%. Fianna Fáil saw the biggest gain from the poll, gaining 4 points to sit on 19%. There's not much in between any of the three parties, according to those opinion polls, which sometimes it appears like information just plucked from the sky, but there is a consistent trend there. Lastly, in the Irish Daily Mirror, Jay Slater, this is the young lad that's missing out foreign. A lot of you keeping track of this story. It's crazy when you see some of the social media stuff, people literally believing they're investigators, but I suppose to some extent they are. Jay Slater's distraught family have vowed to keep hunting for the teenager until he's found after Spanish police called off the search yesterday. And they have been urged to bring in a separate team of experts to try to locate the apprentice bricklayer who disappeared a fortnight ago. The family is said to be devastated and heartbroken by the decision to stop the search. It was funny, not funny like but in funny ha-ha, but just peculiar. I couldn't figure it out when they announced this search was taking place, a massive, massive search, and the start point and the time, and 12 people, just 12 people turned up. Rachel Hargreaves is a close friend of 19-year-old Jay's mum, Debbie Duncan, 55, and dad, Warren Slater, 58, and is in Tenerife to help. Her son, Brad, 19, who was on holiday with Jay and another pal, Lucy Law, said on Friday he saw his friend slip on some rocks during a video call as Jay walked home from a night out on the morning of June 7th, the day he'd vanished. But you'd imagine they know his phone was with him, that I thought you could triangulate stuff nowadays, maybe sign into his Google account and see where the last place the phone pinged from. You'd imagine with that kind of evidence, it shouldn't be hard to locate where he is. But still, the search is ongoing. We're joined on the programme now by Deputy Thomas Pringle. Good morning, Thomas. How are you getting on?
Good morning, Greg. How are you doing? Are you well?
Good. I'm doing fine, thanks, Thomas. You've been highlighting the situation for the 10,000-plus unpaid carers in Donegal. So when we talk about carers, and a lot of this information, I presume, comes from the CSO and stuff, so how are we categorising carers in this context?
Well, basically, and the unpaid carers section would be family members, yeah, who would be looking after members of their own family and keeping them out of hospital and out of nursing homes and stuff like that there, and doing it in a totally unpaid way, it's very difficult for families, but families feel that it's something that they have to do, and I think they embrace it as their responsibility, and they're willing to do it. But I think we need to provide an awful lot more support for people, and we need to be able to let people live as well as caring for their loved ones.
The statutory home care scheme is there. Do you think it misses the target, though?
Well, the government are dragging their heels on actually implementing it. And
that's not in yet. Sorry, my apologies.
No, you're okay, Greg. No bother at all. And they're actually, there's a commitment in the programme for government that they would introduce a statutory home care scheme, and that they would financially support home carers and provide home care for people. So to prevent a lot of people from ending up maybe prematurely in nursing homes and that there as well. And I think a lot of the residents of nursing homes could be living at home happily if they were getting the right supports. And I think that would be the best use of their life as such, I suppose, and also the best use for society. Well, nursing homes, I believe, do have a role and do have a role to play. I don't believe it should be somewhere that people should go just because they don't have a family member to look after them or something like that there, or family members aren't able to look after them. I think it should be somewhere where people go for the end of life care rather than maybe end up living in nursing homes for prolonged periods of time. People would be better off in their own communities and managing at home or in some sort of maybe not full nursing home care, but some sort of step-down facility as well, where they could get support but actually live independently too. I think that would be vitally important, and that's something as a society we should be striving to achieve.
And even creating accommodation that suits that, you know, we really should. I suspect we're going to need much more of this into the future as people live longer, but also as home ownership. At the moment, we're talking about people in their 30s or 40s unable to own a home, but they're going to be 60, 70 and 80, or 70, 80 and 90 into the future without a home, and they'll need somewhere to stay. We really should be at this point planning for that future, I think, in terms of the type of accommodation that we're developing.
Yeah, I think so. You know, and we also then would have a lot of people living in houses maybe bigger than their needs would be as well. And you know, and if people could maybe be supported in their own community and living maybe in some sort of sheltered accommodation or some accommodation that has some supports available to them, that would make an awful lot of difference. And would also then move to and maybe make those other houses available for people with families and stuff like that might need them too. And I think that would be a better result and a better outcome for elderly people to be living in their own communities and with the support of people that they know, and living independently for as long as possible, because that makes a better quality of life for everybody. I think we need government to commit to that, and we need to make sure that there is a statutory scheme available and that funded and there's support for that as well. And that's what's vitally important, you know, because when you consider that, you know, there is 10,700 unpaid carers in the county, as you said, and even 139 of those are under 15 years of age. And really, in the society that we live in, do we want 14 and 15-year-olds to be looking after maybe elderly parents or grandparents as well?
And there's an awful lot of those people as well, who will care for our family. Of course, they're our family, but there's an awful lot of pressure to pay bills and what have you. A lot of those carers too are having to make sacrifices in relation to their work life or what have you, or even their social life for that matter. And they provide a huge value to the state because this is obviously care that the state would have to provide if the families weren't there to do so. But that value is not sort of, I don't think many would feel that value is not sort of recognised or acknowledged even.
No, that is a problem. Like, we've got a huge store on getting as many people out to work as we possibly can, and couples, and everybody should be working and stuff like that there. But actually, the work that goes unseen and the work that actually probably maybe allows our society to function and stuff like that there as well is unpaid carers at home who are actually looking after elderly patients and looking after elderly people. And the states, we should be, as a society, we should be supporting them. We should be supporting them fully. And that is a combination of things. I mean, some people, and rightly so, might choose that this is what they want to do to look after their loved ones, and that and they should be supported. It shouldn't be a penalty for them to do that. And we should be making sure that support is there for them. But we should also be making sure then that there is home support workers and home care workers available then to those who maybe mightn't be in that position. And people shouldn't feel guilty or feel any sense of responsibility if they're not in a position to be able to do that, because with mortgages and stuff like that there, as they are so expensive now, people simply can't afford it as well. And that's something that the state has to step up to the mark on.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, thanks very much for that. That's Independent Deputy Thomas Pringle. If you have a view on that, let us know. 086 60 25000. To some of your texts now, a caller ringing in to say she drove down Letterkenny Main Street and only saw two Donegal flags the whole way from the top to the bottom. She said if you go to other smaller towns like Glenties or Ardra, the places are filled with flags, and that Letterkenny should be doing more to support the team. Fair enough criticism. What do you think? I haven't been through Letterkenny recently. 086 60 25000. We had an awful lot of texts at the weekend, on Friday, which was supposed is the weekend, in relation to conversations had on the Friday panel. And I do commit to read as many of them as is possible. So I want to catch up on some of those. Much of the conversation was about abuse, violence, sentencing. As you can imagine, that story is still very much in the headlines. Some of your messages here. Ireland needs a zero tolerance approach to all abuse by all genders in law and in our culture too. Presently, there are no consequences in law for the psychological abuse of parental alienation and minimal ones for false allegations too. False allegations, you can end up in jail for that, but I take your point. A judge was questioned about a sentence he handed down. His answer was courts are courts of law, not courts of justice. What about the Limerick hurler? He pleaded not guilty and fought the case all the way. Then he brought in his manager to influence the judge. Yeah, a lot of people highlighted the issue they have with, you know, letters of recommendation or support being considered by the courts. Let's see. If he wasn't in the army, what sentence would he have received? His sentence is an open door to other men to do the same thing. There's many people who aren't in the army who also get suspended sentences. I think it was the violence and the boasting of this crotty's crime that has angered people. I don't really think there's no guarantee you would have got a custodial sentence if not in the army. What about personal ownership of behaviour? I know when I took up my job nursing, I knew that if I got involved in any situation where I committed offence, I knew I could lose my job. This didn't seem to enter the soldier's mind, and the sentence has proven he was right. As a Donegal man who spent time in jail, I think jail is the answer. I can assure you, my time in jail taught me to be a model citizen, but in my time there, I met people who practically lived their life in there. They got used to the system and got fed and had a roof over their head. Yeah, there's definitely something to that. Every person who offends for a second time needs to face an automatic doubling of sentence. But the way suspended sentences work is if you offend a second time, you actually get the first sentence. And other judges have minimal training and, yes, need psychological training in all abuse and violent situations. How can they judge whether a false allegation is evident or not when a complex case of child abuse or parental alienation is at play? Another, sure, there was another guy let off yesterday too. That was on Thursday because he was a former football star. It's a joke, says a listener. Why is there no one talking about the men with this boy who did nothing to stop him? Will they be charged? Where were the men she was standing up for? Why didn't they intervene for her in the way she did for them? I'm not really sure of the geography of where people were at that time. Let me see. Hi, Greg. I'm all for helping people that are fleeing war and poverty, but there are a huge amount of people, mostly young men from Brazil, Albania, Algeria, Nigeria, Romania, to mention a few, that are not fleeing war. They're coming here to get free education, dole, and all that entails. Lisa Chambers, who was on our show on Friday, needs to come down from her ivory tower and see what normal housing estates, etc. are like. Well, give us more of an insight. Let us know. Back to the Crotty case, it was the boasting of what he did, a real Jack the Lad. He deserves jail. What I don't understand is why the DPP is not appealing the case. Another caller says, this country is in a worse situation than the UK. At least the UK government can be held accountable for their mismanagement at the next election. The EU can't, and our government just go along with the EU without question. That's actually quite an interesting point when you think about it, because at this stage now, with the EU migration pact being brought in, a lot of the blame focuses on Europe, and we can't really directly influence that, which is quite interesting. I suppose you can if you elect enough MEPs, which actually a lot of MEPs who might be opposed to some of these moves were elected. If Fine Gael MEPs vote for Ursula von der Leyen, it makes a mockery of Ireland recognising the state of Palestine. They are essentially endorsing her support for the apartheid state of Israel and its ongoing attempts to ethnic cleanse. They should be representing the clear view of the Irish people that the ongoing genocide has to be stopped. But it's right out in the open. They've said the more Irish MEPs that back Ursula von der Leyen when they get a vote in a few weeks, the better chance it is for one person, Michael McGrath, to get a better job. I do find that quite head-scratching, but it is a reality. A caller says, has Pride become too commercialised? I've been looking at the Pride celebrations across Ireland, like the St. Patrick's Day parade. It's become too alcohol-centralised instead of about Pride itself. I don't know. I'll throw it out to the audience, see what you think. Great result for Donegal yesterday, Greg, but at 45 a ticket, $6.60 for a pint of Guinness or $7.10 for Rockshore. It's no wonder the place was half empty. $1.80 for a packet of Tato. Ridiculous prices. €35 would be more than enough for a quarterfinal ticket. Wonder how much they're going to shaft people for the semifinals, Noel. Well, Noel, I think it was a sellout, was it not? Or very close to it. Obviously, you know, you had Derry Kerry fans that wouldn't have turned up for the Donegal game. And also, I know a lot of people did stay for the Derry Kerry game, at least for three quarters of it. But not many may have, or not all would have. So Croke Park's going to look half empty at times, isn't it? It does seem a strange way of doing it. I'm not sure if the demand would be there, but obviously Dublin were in the second game on Saturday, and I'm sure there's an awful lot of Dublin fans that would like to have gone in and watched the team play, but they couldn't because half the tickets were already gone on a game not involving Dublin, and half of those people maybe were already up the road. So I suppose what other way could you do it? But it is a bit of a strange way. Hi, Greg. Was listening to a few of Natasha O'Brien's speeches. She says in one there were two gay men, and then in another she said one alone gay man. Just wondering which one is it? Am I to believe? You know, follow the crowd. Does it matter if it was one or two? Maybe she knew it was one, presumed initially that it was two, and then it turned out maybe one was straight, one was gay. I don't know. I don't understand. And this is no disrespect to you, the text. I don't understand how that fits into the sort of conversation. If you text back and let me know. Every day is a learning day, as they say. 086 60 25,000. Okay, you're very welcome back to the programme. In studio with me now is our next guest. It's Fiona Kelly, ATU Marketing and Student Recruitment Manager. Good morning to you, Fiona. Thanks so much for calling in.
Good morning, Greg.
How are you keeping?
I'm keeping good, yeah.
Right, the deadline for the CEO change of mind is today, 5 p.m. So what is the change of mind?
Okay, so when someone makes an application to the Central Applications Office, it means that they've indicated that they wish to come to university this September. So if you're applying to any of the higher education institutions in Ireland to come into first year, you have to apply to the CAO. The system allows for late applications until the 5th of May. And then from the 5th of May until the 1st of July, the people that are in that system, and in total in Ireland, there are 77,000 this year in 2024. And those people get to change their mind. So it means that they get to cancel choices maybe that were at the top of their list. But what they do today by 5 o'clock supersedes everything they've done before.
Mm-hmm. All right, so this is the final decision time.
This is it. So it's final decision time. So in the system, you get to make 10 level 8 choices and you get to make 10 level 6, 7 choices. So your technological universities have the 6, 7 program options as well as your level 8s. So in terms of people making their applications today, it's a good day for maybe parents who maybe haven't been maybe keeping an eye to see has your young person made the applications that they wanted, you know, their preferences that they needed. And it's a good day to just kind of take a wee moment, look at that application process and see, do they have in their application what they want to do in September?
So if any vacancies in any courses become available after today, right, is that that, or is there another stage that happens down the line?
So there is only one other window now after today. So today closes at 5 o'clock. So whoever's in the system's in the system. But on the 29th of August, which is the day after the first round of round one offers, available places opens. Mm-hmm. So if you've never made an application, which we find a lot of people actually use us last year in ATU, 143 people across our 9 campuses contacted us to apply to available places. So it's those programmes that don't fully subscribe. Mm-hmm. Now, high demand, high point programmes will fully subscribe. They never make that list. They'll never come onto available places. So if you're thinking about veterinary nursing, nursing, teaching, home economics, if you're thinking about any of those high demand programmes we have in our university, and it's the same in UCD or DCU, then today is the day. But available places is the last window of opportunity, and it opens on the 29th of August, and it's 45 euro to do that. So if you've never made an application, that's your window.
So, pardon my ignorance here. At this time, really, then people have applied for courses yet that they have the points for?
So points don't come out now until after the Leaving Cert results.
Right. So these are their preferences, on the hope that they get the courses,
exactly.
And then offers would come out.
Yes, exactly.
Guess who didn't go to college?
Well, do you know, the system has actually been the same system for about 25, 30
years. Still didn't go 25 years
ago.
Yeah,
and it was paper-based. Like,
okay, I get you. So in other words, you've had time to reflect now. If you put one thing above the other or didn't include one thing, now's the time to sit down, take a couple hours and say, right, we're getting down to...
Yeah, the nitty-gritty.
Nitty-gritty. Yeah. Okay. Are we seeing any trends in courses that are appealing to people?
Yeah, so what we're seeing this year in terms of our own system at ATU is we're seeing the continued rise in the areas of like business, engineering, law, sciences, your broad program areas. A lot of people are going down the route of common entry. Mm-hmm. Really, really popular because...
What does that mean?
Common entry means like you might know that you're interested in business, but you're not quite sure if it's marketing, management or accounting yet. A common entry degree lets you dip your toe in the water first year of all of those areas.
Oh, right.
It's the same in science. You might think, well, maybe it's pharmaceutical, medicinal, it could be forensics, or maybe it's biological sciences, but you get to dip your toe in year one. So it's great for, say, for instance, students, the broad back of students doing the Leaving Cert, know that you're interested in maybe business or science or engineering, but don't quite know what area yet. And it allows them to kind of test the water. And it's very, very good in terms of support and retention and making sure the students are progressing.
And would that be seen sort of like as an extra year, an additional year at the start? Or if you then decide, right, I want to be specific on that, you can just concentrate on that for the remainder of the course?
Yeah, so what happens is not additional. It's just like a first-year common program. And then in year two, you'd specialise. So if it's a 4-year program, still going to be 4 years. But in the first year, you're going to be doing those common modules and then you dip in. And you might say to yourself, well, gosh, I love marketing. Mm-hmm. And I've really, really figured that out because I did digital marketing as one of the modules, but I'm not a huge fan of finance or accounts. So I'm not going to go down that route. But you'll figure that out in first year because that's what tends to happen. People have maybe perceptions about programs as well.
For sure.
I want to be a nurse, and then the reality of nursing maybe hits them. But I suppose it's really about common entry has become really popular, not just at ATU, across all the universities in Ireland.
But it makes sense too, because there's a huge financial and time commitment.
Yeah.
So, you know, you really don't want to be at a course and then you kind of don't want to upset anyone around you, and you continue at it, but you're not really excelling because you're not interested.
Yeah.
You know, it's like work. You never work a day in your life if you love what you do.
Exactly.
So you want to make sure you're doing the right thing in the college. Obviously, there's different pathways nowadays where people can get to where they want to be. A lot of focus on apprenticeships or what have you. But even within sort of the third level sector, are we seeing sort of it developing or any changes happening to assist people who might need to do things slightly different to what would be seen as the main?
I honestly think at this moment in time, you've never had as many options, choices and supports to be who you want to be. There is a new agenda and very much supported by the government around tertiary education as well. HEU is partners with Galway Roscommon ETB, Sligo, Mayo, Leitrim ETB, as well as Donegal ETB in the space of tertiary education. And what tertiary education lets you do is it lets you go to your local ETB centre for 1 year in specific areas. So we're looking at nursing, business, sustainable engineering technologies and laboratory sciences. So four discipline areas. You do your 1 year there and then you go then and progress to your HU campus of choice. So tertiary education is an option. Our Access programme as well, Greg, continues to thrive. So Access has been transformative for people, particularly for mature students, somebody who's been out of education for a while, who maybe thought, well, God, you know, I'll never be able to do that. I know so many people myself personally who would be friends of mine who maybe would have not progressed to university way back when and have dipped their toe in Access, given the confidence for a year. It's a preparatory course. It's recruiting for our Sligo, our Mayo and our Donegal campuses for the September. So you can apply right the way up to the end of August.
How
for that
do you
program.
Do that? That's outside of the CEO system.
Outside of the CEO system as well. And again, it's just going on to our website, hu.ie/access. And you get to see like what you would do. So you do like a module in learning through numbers. You might be saying, well, I couldn't do maths if I went back to education, or I couldn't even write an assignment. We do communications, we do learning skills. We also then allow you to dip your toe in a couple of areas. So you might say to yourself, well, I think I might be interested in, say, design, or but maybe actually I wouldn't mind giving some of the health science areas a go, but you get to try them as well.
Yeah.
And it's a 1 year free course as well. So you have tertiary education, as you mentioned, apprenticeships are booming, they're growing, and again we're in through that space, and then you also have Access, that confidence builder. It allows you to dip your toe and then you direct entry into us at HU.
I think it's very important that we don't sort of be our own worst enemies and hold ourselves back,
because
there's an option there to say, well, go and see if it's for you. Let's
Big
see
time.
If you can fulfill the potential that you know that's
Big
there.
Big time. I came from a household where my mother returned to education and studied nursing when I was doing my junior certificate. Mm-hmm. So I've seen the power of education in terms of my own home life, but also somebody who returned to education. So it's transformative in terms of the things it can do for you.
Right. So I think really what this conversation about, Fiona, is obviously it's a nice broad conversation, but is maybe for mums or dads or guardians to caregivers to sort of check with their young people, say, look, you've got up until five. Do you want to have a quick look at the CEO change of mind situation? See if anything's changed over the last wee while. So now's a good time.
Now is a good time. And what will happen to you
is...
Now is the only time. It's right until 5 o'clock. And it's free of charge as well to go in and change as well. So that's really, really important. Now, remember, preferences are really important
here. Talk to me about that, though.
Yeah. So your number one is the dream course. Now, a lot of people get fixated on points and thinking, well, I'm never going to get 420 points that I need for that dream course. Put it in there anyway. If your dream course is 420, you don't know for sure if that program will come down in points. It may go up, but you can't be sure. But you can't go back up the system if you don't have it at the top.
Right.
So say, for instance...
So regardless of what you think you might achieve, you put your courses in order of your preference.
Dream courses are number one.
And then let's roll the dice after
that. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And don't assume that you're not going to get what you need. So just make sure that, you know, the dream course, the dream holiday type thing, that you have it as number one. And don't discount yourself because you never know what way the system's going to roll.
What would happen if I thought, right, I'll stick it in at number three.
Yeah.
Right. But then I achieve the point score for one and two. Does that mean I can't do three?
Yeah. It's gone. Unless that programme doesn't fully subscribe.
Yeah.
And for instance, it becomes available on available places. You have no option.
It's really, really important.
Really important. Then, so yeah. Preference is key here today. So really when you're looking at that young
person. Go back in and check the order at the very order. Least.
Yeah. And what happens with the CAO too is they'll send you a record or a statement as well after you've made any changes. So you can very much see. So you can even ask your young person today, can I see your statement, your CAO statement at the minute? And they can log in. They can show you their 1 to 10 list and their level 8 choices and then their 1 to 10 level 6-7. And the level 6-7 list is really important too because the entry requirements are lower generally than the level 8 courses. So what I would say to people is maybe if you're looking at, say for instance, you're looking at early childhood care, health and education, for example, a 4-year program, there's also a 2-year option. The points are lower, the entry requirements are lower. But after the 2 years, you can do another plus 2 years and have your 4-year degree. It's 2+2. So make sure that you've really navigated the system in a way that's going to benefit you too. So if there's a program that's a 6 and a 7 from wherever you're planning to go to, make sure you have it in your list.
Yeah.
And don't discount yourself in the system.
Oh, brilliant. Anything else, Fiona, I've missed that we should add?
No, I suppose if anybody's looking for support today, contact us at cao@hu.ie. Really, it's about tuning in, making sure that you take today until 5 o'clock.
It's kind of potentially a really important day.
Yeah, it is. Very much so. Leaving cert's over now. You know, mature students, PLC, FET applicants, anybody that's in the mix, today's the day.
All right, Fiona, listen, brilliant stuff. Thanks for making that so clear. That's Fiona Kelly, ATU Marketing and Student Recruitment Manager. Greg, the official attendance released by Croke Park yesterday was 46,000. Croke Park holds 82,000. That comes in from Noel. Noel, thanks for the follow-up. It looked more than that, but I think I was kind of referencing Saturday. But anyway, you would have thought there was more demand for tickets than that, wouldn't you? Hi, Greg. Concerning the first round of French election results, the Dublin elites are just as much out of touch as are the Paris elites. As the far-right folks have correctly pointed out, the Dublin elites are little more than an EU puppet regime. It does not say very much for democracy in Ireland, where EU pay packets and future EU jobs are all the Dublin elites really care about and look down the noses at the rest of us. Right, okay. Almost 24,000 cars failed the NCT test across the Northwest in the first 6 months of 2024. The statistics were made available on the official NCT website. In total, 44,500 tests were carried out in Sligo, Carrick and Shannon, Donegal Town and Letterkenny centres from January to June. Letterkenny was found to have the highest pass rate at 48.15% in total. That was followed by Donegal Town, 45.48%. Shane O'Donoghue, editor of CompleteCar.ie, is back with us again. Good to see you, Shane. Thanks for your time. Appreciate it.
Hi, Greg. How are you doing?
Good, good, good. I find these statistics really quite interesting to look at, but really beyond that, can we read anything into it? Road conditions, public attitude? I don't know.
Yeah, I think there's nothing new in it. Really, because the pass rate seems to be pretty stable thing. And it does vary between centres, bizarrely, across the country. And it kind of shows that there are consistently a lot of people bringing the car for the NCT when it isn't ready for it. Or also, more to the point, it isn't quite as roadworthy as it should be. Because, you know, the NCT is there for a reason, to check the roadworthiness of our cars, and it's for safety. That's a big thing. But the point is that every driver, every car owner is responsible for that all year round, not just to go get, you know, a box ticked and get a shiny new NCT cert. So I do wonder if we need to change something about it, or maybe just the messaging around it, that you don't bring your car to the NCT, check what needs to be done and then sort it. You should have the car sorted all year round.
Yeah, but I mean, what they do in Northern Ireland and I presume in Britain is your local garage can NCT the car as well, can't they, in some cases? So, you know, they theoretically say, well, you have a look over the car and do the test on it. We sort of accept this extra levy of the retest, so that we don't throw good money after bad. It's a false economy, I think, really, or a distrust of workshops.
Yeah, I think your last few words there is perhaps picking up on perhaps how the government or the authorities view it, where there's huge expense put into setting up these centres around the country, rather, and into the hands of this company, AP Plus. Whereas in the UK, as you say, they have a different system, the MOT system, and it's done a lot more, not by every garage, but by a lot of regular garages. And it's quicker, it's more efficient. And we definitely could have seen done with that in the last couple of years when we had massive delays at the NCT system. And it's probably more efficient overall. I doubt very much it adds to road safety. I'm not saying it takes from it either, but it definitely wouldn't be a better system than the NCT in terms of road safety. But I don't know what we can do about that. Is it messaging just to encourage people to keep their cars safe anyway?
And it is about safety, really. And I think sometimes we overlook that, not you and I, but us generally. Letterkenny saw the highest amount of dangerous failures, 1,809. So that's a lot of cars before they went in for their test and perhaps driven off after their test, really, that would have what are classed as dangerous failures. I mean, that is something we all should sort of take note on.
Yeah, that is it. Those that's the number that's most important here, the dangerous failures. The failures, NCT failures, there's lots of little tiny fiddly things that can fail it that aren't dangerous. You know, your number plate mightn't be aligned properly, or, you know, the seatbelt, the tester couldn't get at the seatbelts properly, something like that, little things. But the dangerous ones are the things we should be focusing on here. And people driving around with bald tires or badly aligned headlights or bits of bodywork sticking out. And there's loads of other dangerous failure.
Suspension and shocks not functioning. I mean, you corner with a couple of bad shocks, you know, at the back of the car will bounce and you lose it too. I would be really interested to dig a little further. And I wonder how many of these are modifications that were deemed dangerous and were listed as dangerous failures. But we can't just, I think really, we can't just sit back and look at these figures every year. You would hope that someone is digging down into these, you know, in a higher position, saying, what can we do to reform or improve or what have you? Shane, you don't look like you feel that's happening.
No, I don't, unfortunately. I really think the RSA or an equivalent organisation should have full access to the data. And it can be normalised so it's no GDPR issues, which is the excuse that will probably be pulled out. You know, get the data on what actually failed, what types of cars, the age, model, everything, as much detail as possible without, you know, applying it to a person or a registration number. And see what is causing it. Why are so many cars, why have they got dangerous fails? And attack that.
Yeah,
that
and also see what, is there any correlation between this information and road traffic collisions? Not just fatal collisions either, serious injuries. You know what I mean? That then you're sort of starting to, there's many different reasons. We've talked about this before. And contributing factors to a collision. It's not always the driver and the speed and the seatbelt. You know what I mean? It can be car condition and it can be roads conditions as well. All right, Shane, as always, listen, thank you very much for your insights. I really do appreciate it. Take care of yourself. That is Shane O'Donoghue, editor of CompleteCar.ie. A caller quite rightly points out here, Letterkenny saw the highest amount of dangerous failures. It says a lot about the amount of cars on our roads, which are dangerous, they say. Could it be a reason Donegal has so many collisions? It certainly could. But if we're not exploring that or looking into that, it's a piece of information we may never know. Hi, Greg. Helen McEntee going to ban face covering masks at protests. Would I be allowed to wear my burqa at a protest instead? I see where you're coming from. Ironically, a lot of the protests that happened a few years ago were about not wearing masks. And now we're bringing in rules to stop people wearing masks. A carer's allowance. A caller says there are over 5,000 people in Donegal getting the carer's allowance in Donegal. That's according to a recent survey. Another point is that in comparison to the rate of pay in the UK, ours is much better. So we're not doing too badly overall, but we're on about the unpaid carers, 10,000 plus of those. And you know the stories there. I know the people that have given up, you know, some of the best years of their life to care for someone and out of the workforce and all that kind of stuff. Here we go again. Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have overseen the poor, weak, inconsistent legal systems we have for many years, yet they complain about it. Time for change, methinks. Also, hi, Greg. Look back on every photo you took in Highland Radio. You have your hands in your pockets. It's very bad looking. I'm sorry. I never noticed. I'm going to go and look back at pictures now. Apparently, I have hands in my pockets. Is it bad looking? Anyway, 086 60 25000, generally speaking, is the WhatsApp and text number. Or give us a call on 07491 25000. That's hour one of the Nigel Noon Show. We'll be back, of course, with the rest of the programme after we take a break now for the news and obituary notices.